this mean it's over?
Does this mean he likes me?
Are butterflies good?
Am I ever gonna meet someone?
I'm tired of swiping. Am I normal?
Is it okay to like comment on like a friend's boyfriend?
You can keep waiting for the fairy tale, or you can get on board with the new rules of relationships. If you read my advice in the LA Times, then you know this ain't your mama's love advice. This is Dates and Mates with Damona Hoffman. Hello, lovers. Welcome to another celebratory episode of Dates and Mates. Why celebratory? Well, it's the week of my 17th wedding anniversary to my amazing husband, Seth. Some of you have heard him on the show before. He's kind of shy, but he is my person, and I'm so excited to be celebrating another year with him. For those of you who don't know, the traditional gift for 17 years of marriage is furniture, which is hilarious because I just told him I absolutely must have a new couch this year. But you're probably more interested in the underlying reasons for this 17-year furniture gift. Some say it represents the security, comfort, and familiarity of a marriage that's been established for almost 20 years. Now, here's where things get a little bit kooky. You know, my first book, F the Fairy Tale, came out a couple months ago. And in it, I actually compare a relationship to a table. I had no idea about the furniture connection at that point. But I'll read you a little excerpt from the book. Think of a relationship like a table. If it's built with a solid foundation, it can stand for years. Your family gathers around it and you make memories together. You can build a table with only three legs, but it probably won't last as long as one with four. And what will happen when you put something heavy on it? Can it support the weight? If you build the table with weak, splintered wood, it might look charming for a while, but trust me, it'll get wobbly. Could you serve your holiday dinners on it for generations to come? Your poor child is going to be stuck at the flimsy end with all the heavy dishes constantly sliding in their direction. You need to start with four strong pillars and build your table on top of them. Of course, you might need to refinish it one day. You might even replace one of the legs down the road. But as long as you and your partner are willing to do the work to set this table up and keep repairing it together, you and this relationship are table can last. You guys know I love a good analogy. And of course, that is just one of many in F the Fairy Tale. And I do go into what those four pillars of long-term compatibility are in the book, but we're going to do something a little bit different in this episode today. You know, every year at this time, I think not only about my 17 years of marriage, but also about the many matches and meaningful moments that I've shared with my clients and listeners over the years. I still love the work that I do, and I'm absolutely consumed by the constant curiosity about where dating and relationships are headed. And if you want to hear my predictions for the future of love, go back and listen to my 500th episode with Dan Savage or the Valentine's Day episode with Dr. Helen Fisher from earlier this year. But right now, it dawned on me that the future of dating is living right here in my home with my daughter, Addie Hoffman. We have an unconventional relationship for a mother and daughter. I guess I have an unconventional job. So it makes sense that she and her friends would come to me for my insights on dating and relationships. Carpool in my car, it hit different. So I thought, why not invite you into the car with me to experience the kind of conversations that we have? So Addie will be joining us today to share what she's learned about dating and relationships from me and from my relationship with her dad. Plus, she'll take over our usual Dear Damona segment with dating questions from the teenage front lines. And these questions, they're surprisingly relatable to people of all ages. But first, we have an unusual dating dish to serve up for you. Lessons learned, they married, divorced, and then married their ex-spouses again, from the New York Times. All right, friends, so much to get through. Looking to the future, looking back on the past, we might as well go ahead and dish.
D's dating dish.
The New York Times says they married, divorced, and then married their ex-spouses again. They interviewed five couples on how and why they decided to reconcile and tie the knot again. I thought, this is a rare thing. How did they even find these people to interview? But there actually was a study published in the Journal of Divorce and Remarriage that estimated the number of people who remarry their ex-spouse is actually about 10%, which was shocking to me with the number of other people who may be available to date. But I was really fascinated by this article because of the insights that people took away and because of what they identified as truly important in their relationships through this experience of leaving them and then returning to them again. So I'll just highlight a couple of the stories, but you should really read the article. And of course, we'll link to it in the show notes. The first couple that I really gravitated towards, they were learning to navigate religious differences. There was Leslie and Val. They met in 1991 at a party given by a mutual friend. And they thought the other person was attractive, but they were living in different places. And she was Jewish while he was Muslim. And 4 years later, they're just friends, but they found themselves together. You know, one thing happened and then the next thing happened. They found themselves kissing. And 6 months later, they were engaged. They then had children, built a life together. But they began running into cultural differences at every decision along the way. They separated in 2000, and then their divorce was finalized in 2004. But guess what? It didn't really last long because about a month after the divorce, Leslie joined Val and their children for dinner, and they were laughing. And then a couple months later, Val moved back in. And then 5 years later, they were remarried. And they realized through this experience that their religion had been a challenge in their relationship. But when they got to the core of why they held those beliefs and how they really wanted those beliefs to show up in their lives, they were able to navigate a way forward. Val said that she believes in tradition and rituals that bring their religions together. And ultimately, they came to the conclusion that Val was raised really secularly. And so it felt to him like the religion, it smacked of indoctrination, is what he said. And that wasn't her intention, he now realizes. And then Leslie got clear on the fact that it was really about the tradition and rituals that bring a family together that connected her to her religion. And they were then able to create the life that they wanted together and realize that these differences that on the surface seem like really huge differences actually aren't that different at all. It's really more how do you want it to show up in your life. Another one of my favorite couples in this article, they were named Jean and Ronnie. And it's funny, they actually married not once, not twice, but three times. They met at a birthday party in Arkansas in 1977 when she was just 17 and he was 19. They married 2 years later in 1979, but, you know, they're very young. He's trying to establish his career. He was working in a job as a railroad engineer, and then she was home alone a lot. And they divorced in 1980, just 1 year later. But they were granted joint custody of not a child, but their Great Dane, Duchess, which was actually my childhood dog's name. Ooh, synchronicity. Anyway, so the dog kept the couple in contact. And then it only took a year for them to realize that they really were meant to be together. They moved back to their hometown, remarried, started a family. But then when their children went to college, they started to feel the distance between them, and they divorced yet again in 2006. And this is super cute. Then in 2013, their daughter invited them to visit for the birth of their first child. And they were like, why don't we just carpool? Because then we can save on gas money. They also gassed up the tank of their relationship and they got remarried yet again in 2010. Now for the big takeaways. Jean realized that they were really impacted by outside influences that didn't really matter. And, you know, they were both growing in this time that they were apart and together. But here was a big takeaway that I think is really important for everyone. She says that he does go and has a beer or two with some old work buddies, and I see a girlfriend or two for lunch, but otherwise it's he and I against the world. And that's something that I have really learned in my relationship too. you have to be a team. You have to be on one another's team 100%. But that doesn't mean that you have to spend 100% of your time together. And I think it's really important for you to maintain individual friendships and interests outside of the relationship, because otherwise that's too much pressure to put on one person. There were so many other stories that are worth reading. One final takeaway that really stood out to me from this article was not to overdo the intense emotional conversations. I think sometimes we get caught up and we want to make something into something bigger than it needs to be. And if we can just settle into what something is without always trying to make every conversation and every decision life or death, it's a lot easier to sustain a relationship. This was a very inspiring read. I will put the link in the show notes. Ultimately, what this New York Times article showed me is that we are always learning and evolving through relationships. You've heard me say this on the show before. We learn relationally. And there's something that you can take away about yourself and the person you ultimately want to be from each and every relationship you've had in the past. And of course, through any relationship that you invest in the future. When we come back, we'll be joined by my daughter, Addie, to peek into the future of dating and relationships through the Gen Z lens. By the way, if you liked the furniture analogy from earlier, get your copy of F the Fairy Tale today. It is on sale on Amazon right now, like discounted at Amazon. And while you're there, you can leave a fabulous review like Megan, who said the book is 5 out of 5 stars, a life-changing read. Megan says, I read a lot of dating books that are just fluff. This book is the real deal. It's filled with practical wisdom, helpful exercises, and mindset-shifting concepts. I've already made some changes in the way I approach my dating life. Overall, I feel more hopeful and empowered about my romantic future. There you have it. I'm inspiring folks to look into the future with the book and certainly with this episode as well. You can get your copy of F the Fairy Tale today, but you should stick around for what I would call the most unique dates and mates interview we've ever had. Don't go anywhere. Welcome back. Addie Hoffman is here with me today. She is my wonderful daughter. She is 13 years old, and this is her very first podcast appearance ever. But you actually can see her TV debut on America's Funniest Videos on April 14th. And you'll probably see her on stage at a comedy show in about 10 years. But for now, you can see her right here on Dates and Mates. Please help me give big smooches to Addie Hoffman.
Hi.
Welcome, Addie.
Thank you for having me.
Well, you're so official. Okay, so Addie, now you go to an all-girls school.
Factual.
And you identify as cishet.
Mm-hmm.
Does it sound dorky when your mom says that?
A little bit, yeah. You sound like Gen Z-ified, but like, you're not. You sound like a Gen Z dupe.
Well, this is your function in my life right now, Addie, is you're keeping me connected to the next generation. Because without you, I won't know what songs are trending. I don't know what the TikTok trends are. I don't know what's happening in the way people are thinking in the next generation. So you're my lifeline, Addie.
You are also my lifeline.
Thank you so much. Okay.
So
you're my lifeline. Give me a state of the union address here on what is happening in dating. You're in eighth grade right now, so it's a little young for dating, but I know that there are kids in your class who I understand may be, quote, dating, quote, talking.
Okay.
Are there different stages of dating right now? And what does it look like? Where are the people in your class meeting dating options outside of school?
Most people find them like extracurriculars, like tennis, soccer, whatever sport you do. But it's also hard because what if you don't like anyone who goes to the sport that you do?
True. And yeah, and then it gets complicated too because you want to play your sport. And then here's this person taking up your time, you know. But I believe also some of your friends have met people in the neighborhood. Some of your friends have met people through religious organizations, also at camp, right? So there's hope for you yet, Addie.
There is hope for me yet.
What have you learned, Addie, from watching your dad and I in a relationship?
Well, I've noticed that a lot of the time you guys can like get along and you can be like happy and you make jokes together. But every once in a while there, I remember we went to go to a thing and I was wearing overalls and you told me that overalls are for farmers and dad had to go downstairs because he couldn't stop laughing because you were being so ridiculous. And I think that I've learned that even if it's not like an everyday thing where you like have those moments, when the moments do come up, that just makes them like more funny and silly.
Can you give me another example of what you've learned?
I want someone to give me feet massages. I want feet massages. Because my feet, best believe, they're the most like sore, crusty things. And if I have a partner who can rub my feet or like Theragun my back, then we set. We good.
Dad did Theragun my back yesterday. And
oh, well, lucky you.
Don't be jealous.
I had to be Theragunless last night.
I do like the massages. That is definitely a huge benefit of partnership.
Yes.
But I will family Theragun you later, I guess. Okay, so you have a lot of successful relationships in your life.
Yes.
You have me and Dad. You have Dad's parents. You have not my parents, but my dad and his wife, Monica. What do you think you would want in a partnership? Maybe it's too soon to ask you this. I don't know. But do you think that you want to have marriage and kids, or do you feel like you might want to design that differently for yourself?
I think I would like to have kids and marriage. I guess, I don't know, that sounds kind of like really weird coming out of my mouth. Like, I've thought it, I've never like said it.
Because it's so far away.
Yeah.
I got you. I have to admit, when I was your age, I was already like writing my name next to other people's last names and just, I, you know, I sucked down the fairy tale milkshake like so much when I was a kid, because that was what was shown to us. And I think it's really awesome that your generation can see different options. You don't have to have marriage be the end goal. You don't have to have kids be the end goal. You don't have to date someone of an opposite gender. You get to really design your own dating destiny.
Yeah.
Ooh, girl, I am loving this conversation. Okay, we need to take a quick break, but in a moment, I will return to answer some questions with Addie, like, is it okay to tell a friend that you think the person they're dating isn't a good fit? What are the signs that someone is attracted to you? How do you break up with someone kindly? And what's most important, looks or compatibility? Stick around. All right, this is the most unique Dear Damona we've ever had. Addie made a list of dating questions with her friends, and I think you'll be surprised to hear how applicable they are for daters of all ages. Let's get started.
Dear Damona.
Damona, help me.
Okay, so you're going to high school next year, and as much as I would love for you to stay a baby for the rest of your life, I know that's not going to happen. And you and I talk in a different way than a lot of mothers and daughters seem to. I don't know if that's because your mom is a dating and relationship coach or just because you're a super cool kid.
Thank you.
I thought it would be really interesting to take some of the questions that you've asked me and some other questions that you hear from your friends about dating and relationships and bring it to the show. So I'm going to give you a chance to ask me any questions that you have about dating and relationships. And I really feel like the answers will help not only you, but also many of my listeners to be able to approach dating and relationships with a beginner's mind, with a fresh perspective. You up for that?
Yes.
So what's on your mind?
Okay, so my first question is it okay to, like, comment on, like, a friend's boyfriend, like, if you think that they're being mistreated, or, like, you just don't think that they're a good fit together, and, like, you can see that they're putting in, like, a lot of mental energy, physical energy, and it's just, like, you don't think it's gonna work out, and you don't want them to, like, suffer anymore? Like, is it okay to say, like, I don't think that this person is a good match for you? I think you should break up.
So if you have a friend who is dating someone and you feel like their partner is not a good fit, first, I think you have to ask yourself, is this person in danger? That is the first question. Like, are they not a good fit, as in this person may hurt them physically, mentally, emotionally? Mm-hmm. Or are they just not a good fit because you don't like the dynamic between the two of them? You feel like it's not really a healthy relationship. Or are they not a good fit because you feel some kind of way about the way that it's impacting your relationship with this person? Because that does happen sometimes where you, like, not that you want to be with this person's boyfriend, but that maybe there's a little bit of longing for you to have that yourself, or maybe there's a little bit of a feeling of your relationship with this person changing. And you know, I've been through that with friends I am not going to mention, but with very good, we're not name dropping, but I've been through that with friends who changed when they were in relationships. And ultimately, I had to set up a boundary with this person and let them know that I wanted to still be friends with them and to maintain the relationship. But for me to stay in this friendship, I needed to still be a priority to this person. Even if they were going to have a boyfriend, that didn't mean that plans could be broken with me when their boyfriend called, or that their boyfriend's time would be prioritized over mine. And it caused a little bit of a rift in the friendship, but ultimately they broke up with their boyfriend. And then they were like, oh, my friendship is still here. You know, and this is someone I've been friends with for many, many, many years. And they realized that that was a mistake. And the next time they were in a relationship, they were sure to not do that again. Because relationships will come and go, but the friendships that you have, those tend to be more long lasting. So getting back to your original question, if you don't think that they're a good match, I hate to tell it to you, but it's kind of not your business. And if you can manage the relationship with your friend, but if you're also trying to manage their relationship, I think they're going to feel like they're being judged or like you're overstepping if you say anything.
That's fair.
Okay, next question, Addie. What is on your mind?
How can you tell if someone is attracted to you or not?
Well, first of all, if someone is attracted to you, usually I tell my dates and mates listeners to look for the signals of flirting. So smile, eye contact, touch. If somebody is touching you casually, of course, touching your arm, giving you hugs, putting their arm around you, that is usually a sign of more than friendship, right? So those are generally like the first signs that you will notice someone being interested. The other sign that you'll notice is they may change when you enter a room. So maybe they're usually really talkative and boisterous and you enter the room and suddenly they become quiet, or like you see them with other people and they have kind of a different personality, but then around you, they don't quite know how to act. That is also a sign that they usually might be interested. If someone is not interested, usually they will avoid solo time with you. So maybe you ask to hang out with that person one-on-one and they're like, oh, let's just hang out, everybody. Like, let's call so-and-so and see if they can. Well, you guys don't call. Let's text so-and-so and see if they can come to the mall with us too. They also may talk about other people, which can be a sign that they are interested, but it also can be a sign that they're not interested. Okay. So there's a lot of nuance within that. They also may be sort of protective of their body. So we have these invisible bubbles around us. You know, we've talked about this before, like, don't pop my bubble.
Yeah.
When you like someone, you want to be in their bubble. When you don't like someone, you want to sort of protect your bubble. It's another way of looking to read the body language, which is something that I feel like a lot of your generation hasn't really had the opportunity to learn, because everything is text-based. Everything is digital. And you don't have as much face-to-face interaction. I mean, even coming out of COVID, I mean, you were wearing masks at school a year and a half ago, were you not?
If I'm in eighth grade, like, year would be seven. Yeah, so like January of sixth grade, we were still wearing masks. That's crazy.
Okay, so two years ago, you were still wearing masks,
yeah,
right? And there was a lot that was lost in not being able to read people's facial expressions, as you were at a point in time where you're developing your understanding of what people's facial expressions mean. And I think for anybody listening right now, that lost time, I say to the audience that dating is a set of learned skills. And so if you have not worked a specific skill, it's going to be a little weak. And we weren't practicing flirting because we were not out and about for, you know, three of the last 4 years. We were not reading people's facial expressions. We were not practicing body language, because think of how big our bubbles became during the pandemic. Our bubbles were 6 feet. So we're still unraveling that. And for your generation, it's almost like a new skill that needs to be learned and developed.
That's interesting.
So tell me, based on what I said, is there somebody you think has a crush on you?
Okay, I don't want to name drop, but there is a kid who, like, will be really, like, fun and, like, interesting. And then, like, the next second, he'll be like, I need a hug. I'm really sad. Like, you know, like, can I have a hug? And then he'll, like, I feel like he'll, like, confide in me extra than, like, anybody else.
That is something, too. Like, you know, you haven't obviously read my book.
No.
And you shan't until until at least 5 years from now. But in it, I talk about the four pillars of long-term compatibility. And one of them is trust. So that's actually a sign when somebody confides in you and somebody trusts you, that is a sign that they really feel a connection. Whether it's romantic or not, you got to look at a lot of these signs compounding. But just on the surface, that does mean something, that somebody could trust you with their feelings and their thoughts. Next question, madam.
I got this question from a friend of mine, and she was just wondering, like, how would you break up with someone if you know that you don't have feelings for them anymore?
What I always say on this show is that if you are not on the same page as someone else, one of the most compassionate things you can do is to actually let them know how you feel. And somehow we got the narrative that if you do not want to date someone or you do not have feelings for someone, that it could be hurtful to them to share how you actually feel. But I actually look at it as really liberating, because if you think of how you may be misleading somebody's hopes and dreams, or how you may be wasting their time. And I often say on the show that time is your most precious resource. We're not getting any more time. And you're young, so it feels like time is endless. But I can tell you from the other side that it is not. Time is finite. So even at your age, as you are exploring, it's important to still be mindful of the time that you're spending and how you're spending it. And you're in a phase of exploration. So, and your friend is. So I think it's great to talk to different people, date different people, get to know who you are through that experience. But if you have clarity, the most compassionate thing you can do is to let someone know you're not on the same page. And the best way to do that is to create a safe space of sharing, but You know what I actually do, Addie? I write down when I have a difficult conversation ahead of me, I actually write down what I'm going to say or what I hope to say. I write down all of my points, same way I do when I'm doing a TV segment. I write down my talking points. Yeah, you've seen me prep for those before. I write down my talking points and I write down what my goal is and how I want to feel in the moment and how I hope that the other person may feel. And you, of course, do not bring that into a conversation because that would be weird, right?
Yes.
But if you do that preparation, so you get crystal clear on what you need to say, and then you create a space of sharing where you start with a personal share. I've been noticing that we're not quite on the same page like we used to be. And then you clearly state what outcome you want. Now, this is a different conversation than let's discuss where we're at or trying to get clarity on whether the relationship could continue or not. This is if you are sure that you want to break up with this person, you have all of your reasons, you've done your pros and cons list, and you are clear on that. You've got to stick to your own script because a lot of times you'll get in the moment with that person and maybe they want a different outcome and it's really easy to get swayed and manipulated and second guess yourself. But if you are already having that thought or your friend is already having that thought that they want to break up with this person, they need to be able to clearly explain their perspective. And explaining their perspective may just be, I don't feel the connection anymore. I don't feel the spark. Sometimes we feel like we need to give examples and get into the specific content. And the feeling of not wanting to be in a relationship with someone is reason enough to not continue a relationship. Mm. So I know it's tough. And these conversations, they're hard for adults to have even. But I really find that writing out your thoughts is a really helpful exercise for any difficult conversation. What's your last question, Addie?
So what do you think is more important, like someone's looks or someone's personality?
Well, you know that I say chemistry is a myth. So you can't be in a relationship with someone you have absolutely no attraction to. But I do believe that through connection, chemistry can deepen. And if it's not just conversation, it's shared experiences, it's shared views of the world. I talk in the book about having shared goals for the future and values. If those two things are aligned, you really only need a couple of interests to be the same. But if you're looking at the world through the same perspective and you're having these interesting conversations and you're really feeling connected to someone, I promise you that the chemistry can deepen and develop. Now, of course, if you're just like, I'm totally repelled by this person and I'm not attracted to them at all, it's hard to start from absolute zero. But if you're like, well, I don't know, maybe. Sometimes I talk on the show about the 3-date rule. Sometimes if you give it more than one date, it will develop in the future. And one challenge I see with a lot of daters today is that we are, because of online dating, we are so conditioned to the immediate instant attraction. And if it's not there, we swipe left and we're done and that person is out of our life forever. And we kind of have carried that mentality over to even in person. We're swiping left when we meet people in person without giving a chance for that connection to develop. And you know that connection, it takes time, right? It takes time to build. Mm. So chemistry's a liar, honey. But know that you can have both and you shouldn't settle. Mm. And a person is out there who will fully understand you, who will know you to be the beautiful human that I know you to be. That is really my big wish for you and daters of your generation, is to just be present, because I think that's something that's really hard today.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here with me, Addie. I hope you enjoyed the anniversary episode, number 502 of Dates and Mates. And if you are a person of any age and you have a question for a future episode, please DM me at Damona Hoffman on Instagram, TikTok, X, or Facebook, or give me a call or shoot me a text at 424-246-6255. We will be back again next Tuesday with another insightful episode of Dates and Mates. Until then, I wish you happy dating.